everyone. I'm Russ Salzberg, and I want you all to listen up and get a load of this. It is time to turn back the clock. Big time. Salzberg and Summers together again for a Sweater and Schmoozer reunion. That's right. So like I said, listen up, everybody, because you're really going to want to get a load of this. All right. Like I said, it is a reunion. I worked with this guy for about 5.5, 6 years. It ended in 2000. Sometimes we wanted to kill each other, but we always loved each other. It was an absolute blast. I think about those times with him all the time. I am talking about the one and only Mr. Steve Summers. Thanks for being here, buddy boy.
Well, it's great to be here, and you certainly bring up those 5 years. Been taking pay cuts ever since. And right now, I'm just about paying them. I think I was telling Russ about before we came on the air, I think Social Security and the pension. I would more than double and triple my salary.
But you know what, Stevie? We had...
We had a nice time.
Really?
And both of us had to learn to work with each other, a partner, because I had done the overnight for about 9 years. And you, for a couple of years, were working solo 10 to 1. So after, I think, the adjustment period, I think by the time it ended, after 5 years in 2000, and the ratings were always very good, I think by the time it ended, we were probably, you can make an argument, I think probably we were doing the best program you could do. Working together, together as one.
Yeah, listen, like I said, you know, we had our fights, and that's what happens when you're on
sure.
the... Yeah, well,
like right.
You fight with your wife, don't you?
Of course. And lose all of them. But that's the comfort zone that we had gotten into, where you can have differences on and off the air, little bit of arguments, and then for the betterment of each other, do the best kind of program you can do.
I still, to this day, and you know, looking back on it, Schmooze, to this day, I think about it, and to me, listen, they're batting their ball. They can always make changes. You and I had discussed it over the years. But we weren't part of the standard midday, let's just talk sports show. We would talk about, you use the phrase to me all the time, range. We would talk about The Sopranos. We would talk about movies. We would do our shtick with this and that, and it was fun.
Everything, and we also cover the X's and the O's too. So no, the range is the word I like to use, and you're right. Movies, television, and here's another thing where the program and what you were totally responsible. You were not only a co-host of the program. You were getting every guest just about we were getting. You were getting Steinbrenner, and you were not getting B-list or C-list type of guys. You were getting the Steinbrenners. You were getting them on no other programs.
George used to come on all the time with us.
Well, and everyone knew you from the television, and certainly everyone knew of you from the radio. That's for sure. You were all media. So the bottom line is you were getting a lot of guests because you were a co-host, executive producer, choreographer, key grip, and unit production manager all rolled up into one.
Well, but let's not talk about me. That's why I want you on here. Before we were together.
Well, yeah, but the story both of us.
I appreciate it. Yes, you're right.
And that's why I
wanted you here today, and I was thrilled when you said you would come in. But think about it.
So nice to be out in public without a catheter.
Well, yeah, folks. Steve, since you bring
it
up.
I haven't been the same.
You
miss it.
You had a catheter put in because you were having a bladder problem?
Well, yeah, the way I put it is I needed a plumber. And the Niagara Falls had turned into a babbling brook. You know, I couldn't fish. And then I'm going to sleep and I'm fishing. I needed a diaper. I'm like 70 years old. I needed a diaper. So the bottom line is that for 6.5 weeks, I had to go see the plumber. And the bottom line is he put a catheter in. And that's a lot of fun. I want a lot of people to go through that. At least once in their lifetime. It's a living hell. And right in there. And he, first of all, he couldn't find it. He tried to stick it in the belly button, and that's really insulting. No, you don't know how embarrassing that is in the office there with women around, everything. Even the nurses were looking away. They couldn't find it. And my wife would tell you the same thing, but that's another story for another time. And then taking it out. But the bottom line is I had it in there for 6.5 weeks. And I learned a little discipline because you got a bag full of urine wrapped around your leg. You got to empty it. So every hour and a half, I was true to form for 6.5 weeks and emptied that bag on the money.
This is some reunion.
It is. Because in the days I was vital and firm when I was working with you. So, see, my cousin Gail, she says, you know one thing you now know, Steve? She says, growing older sucks. And it does. It really does.
You bring up, and I remember when you started dating her, Robin, and now she's your wife of how many years now?
Well, that's a good question. Let me think about it for a minute. Our anniversary, actually, what is this? July 24th. I don't remember my own birthday. July 24th, I think it'll be 12 years.
Today's July 24th.
Oh, geez, I forgot again. Oh, my God. Gee, you know something? I'm glad you reminded me.
Are you serious?
I could pick up something from the deli on the way home. I was over there having a cup of coffee. You know what? A salad bar that's less than $8.50 a pound. I'm over there to, oh, you know what? I'll get her something. They have muffins over there. No, they look nice, huge. And they have all kinds of food. And oh, I know, you know, July 24th.
Today's July 24th. Are you serious?
Thanks for reminding me. The hell I take for forgetting. It's either 11 or 12 years, one of the two.
Today is 11 or 12 years.
Yeah, we lived together for about 8 years.
No, I remember.
So about 20, 21 years
I've
known
her. You gave her the name. I'll never forget when we were talking on the
air. The Hawker from Hackensack.
And I gave you I asked you, why do you call her the Hawker? And your answer was, because she hawks and hawks and hawks.
Russ getting ethnic. And it works, by the way, in New York, doesn't it? But no, you're right. The Hawker from Hackensack. She's really from Springfield,
right?
But at one time lived in Hackensack.
So let's go back to your beginning, buddy. I mean, we'll talk about the
overnight.
Show.
The overnight.
You're there. You're at FAN now from the very beginning.
Yeah.
And I do mean this in all sincerity. The one thing that I find makes you unique to just about anybody else who works in the media in this city, you are not from New York City. You are from San Francisco.
Right.
But if anybody spoke to you, they think you are a born, dyed-in-the-wool New Yorker.
Robert Klein, the New York Times did a nice story back in 2012. And they had it in there from San Francisco and doing okay in New York City. It was a dream. You look at my high school yearbook and my graduate.
You look the same.
Yeah, I should only look like half of what I look like. Then I look like a decent human being. Although it was still difficult even then in high school to get dates. There was one woman, I swear to you, who actually said to me, when I asked her if I thought she thought I was nice looking. And she really said to me, it looks like the face put on fire and put out with a pitchfork, which didn't translate to me like I was a nice-looking or cute guy.
Tell us about Robert Klein.
Robert Klein reads the article in the New York Times, and this was back in November 2012, and they had pictures. They had come down to the radio station and taken pictures, and so to make a long story longer, like only I can do, Robert Klein reads the story. He couldn't believe I was from San Francisco. He thought I was from Brooklyn.
It's amazing to me.
Well, here is the real thing. It really comes from the parents. And when I was a kid, people thought I was from back east. And here, of course, no, until they, the first few years at the radio station overnight. I certainly talked all the time about growing up in San Francisco, and DiMaggio came from there, and Lefty Gomez, and Keith Hernandez, and blah, blah, blah.
I remember all the times, the shtick we used to do with McCovey lining out to Bobby Richardson.
Course.
We did that all the time on the show.
Sure, we did it with us, did it overnight.
So used to talk about Jim Ray Hart and his big tuchus.
Oh, never in my life. And Crash, our engineer, he's not small either. I'm going to tell you something. This is he mentions Jim Ray Hart, Crash. I'm going to the engineer, the board op, the unit production manager, co-unit production manager with Russ. He has a big tuchus. So Jim Ray Hart, it stretched from third base to second base. He could have played his own shift when they didn't have the shift. But no, I talked about those days all the time, and my dream was to work Broadway. That was my thing.
Really?
Yeah.
You've never said that to me.
Well, I used it on the air. I think by the time I started with you, maybe I didn't have to. And I've talked about it back in the crazy hours I even have now, when some people see a bio, they look at Wikipedia, they remember reading an article like from the Times, whatever, which was very flattering without question, to get an article in the New York Times. And on the front page, it was November. I know the date better than I do with the anniversary. No, November 29th, 2012. And it's online with WFAN, and it talks about growing up in San Francisco, the whole thing. I mean, I'm you know, to me, in San Francisco was minor league. The only thing that meant something to me, especially with media and especially with sports, was New York. And you look at my high school yearbook, Huesler has seen it. A couple of people at WFAN have seen it.
Right.
And it says, ambition, New York sportscaster.
But the thing about it, though, and it always struck me, I remember...
Oh, I used Yiddish.
Well, we used to do that all the time.
Of course,
I mean, that was
Jewish.
Part of our shtick.
Well, sure.
No, but the thing about you was, and maybe it was because of the Yiddish shtick and what, but when we first started working and they told me, you know, that we wanted to hook us up.
Right.
When I found out, when you told me you were from San Francisco, I was like, what? To me, you had to be, I figured, from my neighborhood.
And kind of surprised, because I did talk about it a lot, and it certainly was in my bio,
right,
the whole thing. But and when I was a kid in high school, some people thought it was from back east. It didn't say New York. Are you from back east? So I think it had to do a little bit with ethnic, being sarcastic.
You're sarcastic?
See, that's the whole thing. And not the straight and narrow at all with the approach. And a lot of it is, and you know this better than anyone, the writing that I do. I don't say anything off the top of my head. I wrote my whole thing with Russ.
I am going to cut you off there for a second.
You know what I'm talking. I wrote everything.
I mean this in all sincerity, folks. I have worked in this business, I don't know, 36 years. I will tell you this. I have never...
A TV icon and a radio icon is Russ.
I have never...
Who doesn't know from him?
I never come across a person, I've said this all the time, especially at the radio station, but I mean in general, who was a better writer than you. And I mean that in all sincerity. The one thing, even though we wanted to kill each other sometimes, and when people ask me about... But I used to say, the one thing about Steve that I knew when he was coming to work, and I think you could say the same thing about me... Always bringing the A game make it better. Your monologues have been brilliant, and they still are.
No, not all of them. Some of them.
Yeah, some of them pissed me off. I thought they sucked with the Fakakta fearless forecaster and this and that.
No,
you don't like to beat a dead horse, do you?
Oh, do you think I repeat? I'm like cable television. I mean, I'm repeating. You know how many times I've seen Inglourious Bastards on Showtime this month? And it's a great film. And I was watching yesterday when we were talking on the phone. It was yesterday, the day before, a Clint Eastwood movie I've not seen, Channeling, it's a strange kind of movie, and not one of his better films. What I'm just saying. But I love to watch films, as I know you do. There was something I was going to say, but I forgot.
Like when you don't go off on a tangent.
Right. You know about the writing, and seriously, this is the way I look at it, and you're your own worst critic, too.
Mm-hmm.
You know when the magic is there, you feel good. Nobody has to say a word to you about good job. And you know when you could have done better, when the energy isn't there. The writing is for the ear. With radio writing, it's very simple. It's the delivery. That's what I always think when I have the energy to do to read it the way I'm thinking it as I'm putting it down on paper. And you, off the top of your head, tip of your tongue, could do the same kind of monologue and have when you were on the radio station as well.
No, but yours was a little different.
Well, yeah, I mean, you're right, because I was trying to tell a story, and it is a little bit different. But it wasn't so much the writing. If you write for a newspaper, you could reread a paragraph. That's writing for the eye. When you're writing for the ear, they only hear it one time. So it's simple writing. But the key to me, it was always how I delivered that monologue.
Yeah, you know, it's funny that you mention the writing, like how different it is writing for a newspaper. Years ago, you know, before I was at FAN.
And what writers here?
It might have been my first year. Might have been 1988, 89. Uh-huh. The Bergen Record asked me to write a column.
Oh,
and
really?
In fact, the column was called Get a Load of This, the same name as the podcast.
Terrific.
But I remember sitting down and I'm saying, what a huge difference writing for people to read and writing for people to speak. And then fast forward, I won't bring up his name, but there was a guy who was at the newspaper, in fact, at the Daily News, we'll talk about that,
but at
the Daily News, who was trying to get into the TV business. And I did him a favor. I got him like an audition. So he wrote his script, and then he went upstairs to tape it. And the script, the way he wrote it, was writing as if he was writing his articles or his column.
Oh yeah,
and oh yeah. It just, you can't. The whole
a little bit different.
TV, radio, and the print is all different.
Of course.
Having said that, what the hell has happened to our industry? And I mean both print and electronic.
I wonder if there'll even be radio as we know it. You know what, 10 years from now? I guess as long as there are cars, there'll always be a radio in them. But I, you know, now in the palm of your hand, you can hear something and get information. You know, when WFAN started, it was an important source of information and talk back and reaction and response for a fan. Although sports talk radio had always been here, that's for sure, with the Bill Mays or even John Sterling.
Right.
Back in the 70s, I think, was doing, you know, once a week or twice a week, whatever it was, some sports talk. But nothing like WFAN or 24/7, something new. But the bottom line is now, you know, there's so many other ways to hear things, streaming and podcasting. I mean, podcasting is the wave of now and the future to be. I'm really thinking that outside of your automobile, if you're in traffic, bumper to bumper, wherever you're going, and you're in traffic, you have the radio on, you're listening to music, you're listening to talk, whatever it may be. So, but radio, I think, is on the way out. I mean, I hope I'm wrong.
I hope you're wrong as well.
Yeah, sure.
But print, for example, when we're talking about
the Daily News.
I mean, to me,
John Harper, I saw him.
I mean, think about that. You know, John Harper, to me, he's not good. He's Hall of Fame quality stuff. Hall of Fame quality stuff.
Terrific.
And what has happened to that newspaper, whether you would...
And Bill Madden was, I guess, the first one, although he was wrong about A-Roid, as I call him.
Right, right.
And so they let him go. But they went from a staff in the sports department, the number
34 to 9. Can you imagine? 9 people. They dumped the entire photo group. The pictures are all going to be coming from like AP. The entire photo staff is gone.
Yeah. I didn't know that.
Do you remember when we were kids in high school? Crash is younger. When you and I were kids in high school, I know in New York they had a thing called, in public school, the weekly reader. It was the kids that was delivered to the school. The Daily News today was the size of the weekly reader. You can wipe your tuchus with it.
And pictures, they're photographs forever.
Yeah.
I mean, very famous photographs and blah, blah, blah. And you're telling me the photographer, and here we are.
Yeah. I mean, it's unbelievable.
Oh, back page, too. Crash is showing us today's Daily News with the front page and the back.
Yeah, no.
And the back page headlines are to die for. You know, they're really funny.
But think about it. The entire... I mean, the industry has changed. I think the Daily News, pretty soon, we're not going to see it. I'll bet my bottom dollar.
You can read online everything. That's what people are doing.
I'll bet to get the Daily News in the future, you'll have to go to digital. That's where I think
it'll be. I believe you.
You see, I think you probably do what I do. In fact, when I met you downstairs to come up today, you were carrying your newspapers in your hands.
Sure.
I still, to this day, go out every morning and get my 5 newspapers. It used to be 5. It won't be the news any longer. The news, the Post, the Times, the Record, and the Star Ledger.
Of course.
And the reason that to me...
You ever look at Newsday? Which is Long Island.
No, I don't...
God forbid it should be like considered a New York... Right? Their sports section isn't bad.
No, not at all. I'm in Jersey, so I'm not getting it.
Right.
But my point being... The reason I look at newspapers, and I think you do the same thing, when you're looking at a newspaper, you're thumbing through the newspaper.
And reading it at your leisure.
You're perusing. So when you're thumbing through it, you might come across something that normally you wouldn't look for, but, this is interesting. And it gives you something to talk about. When you're just going online... You're only reading for what you're interested in.
Right.
Let me get the Met game. Let me get the Yankee game. Let me see what's going on in the NFL.
And I don't, I'm not very good technical. Whenever I'm looking at anything online, there's always that little box that says stop script and recover web page. I can't read. I don't get that when I'm reading the Daily News or the Post.
Well, folks, let me.
You know what I'm talking about? Stop script. What does that mean?
Let me say this.
And then it freezes when I want to go to another page. I can't work. Now, when I'm looking in a newspaper, I can turn the page. No problem. Anywhere there, does it say stop script? Recover web page?
Let me tell the public this. When I called Steve to ask him to be on. So Schmoozy says to me, great, I'm glad to do it. I was thrilled. I says, okay, do me a favor, Schmoozy.
And you said you would pay me.
I never said that.
No, I'm fooling around. I should be paying him.
So Schmooze says to me, I say, well, do me a favor. Just give me your cell phone number. Just give me your cell phone number because in case something happens, I want to be able to get in touch with you if I can't get you at home. And he says to me, I don't know my cell phone number. I never call it.
Yeah.
I go, Steve.
And I don't know it. And I got to show you where I keep it.
Now you got to see this wallet. How old is this wallet?
Both my skin and the skin of the wallet are the same from Jurassic Park. Here's my cell phone. Is this it? Yeah.
Look. I don't want to touch that. I'm going to get.
Look at the stains.
I'm going to get hand, foot,
it looks
mouth.
Like parchment.
I'm going to get what Noah Syndergaard has.
It's parchment, like from the 1700s. There it is. There's my cell phone number.
So Steve says to me, well, I never call it. So I says, okay, Steve. but I said, just give it to me so I have it in the future. So he says to me, folks, and I kid you not, Steve says, well, Russ, I mean, but they have to send me a new phone. I said, well, what happened to your phone?
Yeah, I'm embarrassed.
He goes, I dropped it in a pot of coffee.
In a coffee cup. I was in the car. I was drinking some coffee. I put the cup in between the two front seats. And then I was stopping the car. I had the phone in between my two legs as I was driving. And I pulled over to park. And we have we don't have a key for the car. You press a button for the starting and the stopping. And I had the phone in between my legs, and I was going to get out of the car, and I was going to put the phone on the seat to my right. And
when you had the phone between your legs, did you have the catheter in at the same time?
No, that's where the phone made me think of the catheter. So I haven't been the same since it's been taken out. So anything in between my legs that looks like it's alive, something that looks it's like there's something there.
That works.
It works, yeah. So I, and not paying attention and being careless, I move the phone to my right into the coffee cup in between the two seats. Can't make it up. And I thought the phone might work once it dried, but not so.
So have you gotten a new cell phone yet?
Yeah, I've got it with me
Oh,
now.
You do have it now.
Well, now I have a new phone.
Oh, look,
so don't ask me. I don't know. Would it be the same number?
Is it an iPhone?
No. It's, I think.
I'll go away. Listen, to now he's going. He's thumbing through his pockets, folks. Oh.
Yeah. No, it's a flip phone.
It's a flip phone.
Yeah. And I had to wait about 4 weeks for this because Verizon said, are you serious? You want a flip phone to replace the one that you ruined? And we had to return the other phone, and then I got this one. And I would imagine it's the same number, correct?
Yes, Steve, it's the same number.
All right, thanks. And I knew it would be good coming here. Now I know. It's 211.
So tell me something. You're married. It's going to be 11, 12 years.
Two.
Robin's a little bit, quite a bit younger than you, is she not?
Who isn't? But you know, I mean, really.
I always thought you would have children. I wanted to see a little Stevie smoking a Camel and having headsets on.
Well, you know, I didn't want to get married. You know, and everyone thinks you're gay if you're not married by the time you're 30, let alone 60.
I never saw. So, I thought a lot of things of you. I never thought you were gay.
No. Believe me, they're not my type. And if somebody was gay looking at me, I wouldn't be their type. That's for sure. You know, but you know, when I was young, I had a decent social life because I was on TV as a kid a little bit. So, and that helps when you walk into a restaurant. The girls would know you from the news, and the guys would know you from sports, and you know that very well.
You
found a beautiful wife, mother, companion, friend, the whole thing.
We're coming up on 39 years in August. Three little grandsons now.
Yeah, right. And we were at your bar mitzvah for your two daughters.
Yeah.
What a spectacular event. That was. It was really very, very nice.
And I remember Stevie got all dolled up in a tuxedo.
I had a tie, like I had a necktie, I think, which Robin tied for me. You know, in all the years when I was a kid, and another lifetime ago when I did do TV, I never learned how to tie a tie. And I should be embarrassed even admitting that. And to this day, if I have to go to a wedding of our mitzvah with Robin's nieces and so forth, the tie comes over the head. I don't know how to tie a tie to this day.
I'm going to say this, and I'm not trying to make you feel uncomfortable, but just sitting here and listening to you talk, and I think all the people who will be listening and hearing this conversation.
Do you have an audience?
Yes, we do have an audience. It's my... my children. No, but I'm serious. Steve, you come on roughly 6:30 at night, and you'll go to 10 if there's no ball game.
Right.
But to me, you're too talented, and you should still be having a more primetime show. I mean that in all sincerity. And I'm not looking to give you headaches or anything over there.
Warner Wolf once said to me, I think you're mismanaged over there. But that was a long time ago. It's all relative. You know, at least I've had the security of a full-time job, which I was telling you before, helps with the pension, helps with the Social Security. So all of those things add up, and I'm still working at an advanced age, and my producers are in their 20s. You know, this is what it's like. I'm the oldest thing
there. You got drawers older than them.
No kidding. I'm wearing them. As you noticed earlier when you looked
away. Yes, this attire that you wore today.
He looked away with a look on the face. But I'm just saying. So I'm lucky that way that I've had a job for 31 years. Never would have thought that.
The one thing that...
I mean that, too.
I know you do.
I do.
I think the one thing that anybody who's listened to you over the years...
An acquired taste. I don't think I'm as deep as... I'm going to pay Russ a compliment. I don't think I'm as deep as a lot of guys that analyze like you can do and like some of the other guys at the radio station can do. I can't go that deep. I can be creative a little bit.
But that's what you do. But
well,
I don't think the other people, including myself, could be that type of creative. Everybody's creative.
But you know from humor.
Yeah,
you have a sense of humor.
I understand.
You and I had a sense of humor.
Without question.
On that program. Don't sell yourself short with the humor. No, you weren't with the punchlines and the vaudeville that I was getting away with. No, but I'm saying we when we did our program together, there were laughs generated, there was angst generated, there was all kinds of emotion generated by the audience. What was never generated with the two of us was indifference. And as I mentioned to you earlier, or in a previous conversation that we've had over the years, blah, 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 whenever we talk about the business in general, indifference is the enemy. We did not draw indifference. Anger, laughs from the both of us.
What?
So, and in a way, I'm throwing you a bouquet.
No,
here.
I appreciate it. No, but Steve.
And that's the truth.
When we started, and I caught this the first day, and I realized it, the very, very first day, the importance, in particular on radio, the importance of a partner. Because to have somebody
to bounce off.
The people that we would talk about, even like Abbott and Costello and Laurel and Hardy and Martin and Lewis,
of course.
To have somebody to bounce off, each person brought something different to the table.
And we did too.
But the one thing that I think, and I, to this day, it's the biggest compliment that I get when people run into me and they say, you know, they're talking to you for a little bit, they say, you know, gee, Russ, like, you really are a regular guy. You're just the same way you are on the air. And my answer to that always is, well, what the hell am I supposed to be? And you, everybody knows you're that guy, and everybody knows you love what you do.
Oh, sure.
I mean, too. You love, without question.
And Crash with the tokens like Jim Rayhart from the 1960s of the San Francisco Giants. No, he loves it too. I mean, you have to, because it's crazy hours, a crazy business. You know, it doesn't, no rhyme or reason sometimes. No justice, no logic, no reason. I'm just saying.
Right.
So it's a crazy business to be in. None of us sitting in this room, you, Russ, me, and Crash, the three of us, and everybody else was in this kind of business. We're not 9 to 5. We couldn't be bank tellers.
No.
My father wanted me to run the mom and pop grocery store. I couldn't go on a delivery.
I'm from a housing project.
Yeah.
My father let him rest in peace, work for the transit authority.
Of course. Well, a real job.
Yeah.
I mean, that's wonderful.
No, you're right.
That's a real job. Excuse me. So,
feel free to clam up the microphone.
Look at the Camel cigarettes right here. And Crash is going to have to clean the microphone. But you're right. We were not built that way. It's not in our DNA. It's risky and dangerous to be in this business a little bit because there's no such thing as security. And look at you and me too. Both of us have been very lucky. No, you want to be good. You have been good. I have been good. But you have to be a little bit lucky. Look at the careers we've had. This is not for everybody. And everybody doesn't have the kind of careers that we do have.
You know what,
Steve? And you have to knock on wood.
Knock what? Here. I'm knocking on my head as well.
I mean, right. Of course already. And you have never, ever forgotten that about how grateful you can be and are that you make a career and still working in this kind of business.
In all my years in the business, and you know this about me, I still have the same agent.
Okay.
I still have the same agent.
Okay.
And all the years in the business, not once, I can say this emphatically, he would tell you the same thing, not once did I ever say, why is this guy making more than me? Why is that guy making?
Right.
I never gave a rat's ass about that. As long as I was always treated fairly, I was happy about that.
Right.
As long as I was treated fairly, you had your little...
And at WFAN, you think anyone gets raises there?
The only with a catheter, maybe you get a raise.
Exactly. I haven't gotten a raise since I've been there, and if I had gotten one raise, I wouldn't be wearing shorts. I'd be able to buy a full pair of pants that go all the way down to the ankle.
No, but you know, like when you talk about longevity, one thing that I can say that I'm proud of is in the TV business. basically, I stayed at one place because even though I went from Channel 9 to Channel 5, the only reason that changed and I was doing both at one time was because Fox, Channel 5, sure. bought Channel 9.
Right.
And you know what? A lot of guys have been in this town, you know, had long careers, but going from place to place. I stayed at one place.
That's right.
And you know, like, if you're happy and you like what you do.
And you do. And did.
That's it.
Of course. And things come and go. And you could be 80 and back on television. I wouldn't put it past you.
Well, how about you being 80? Which
soon.
Is coming soon.
Very soon. I feel it. And look it. I might as well be it.
Talk to me about the situation. We haven't touched on it yet. The situation with our local baseball teams. Let me first ask you about Noah Syndergaard, the hand, foot, and mouth illness. I mean, I hope he wasn't scratching his you-know-what's there.
Yeah, listen, hey, apparently he got it at a kids' camp during the All-Star break.
Well, that's what
it?
They say. I mean, who knows what he was scratching.
You're not kidding. Yeah, you're not kidding. And it's so appropriate because he works for an organization that has basically foot-in-mouth disease. This is is that organization a mess or what? And you know, the Wilpons, in the earlier, when the Mets were on WFN, I got to know not Jeff.
No.
But Fred, the nicest guy in the world.
Fred would come on with us quite frequently as well.
And he was like, when my father passed away in 2003, he wrote, and I still have it. Can't make this up either. He wrote a handwritten condolence card.
But that's him. That's Fred.
Isn't it? Isn't it? And you knew him. You know him.
I couldn't believe it. It hurts me when they get, for lack of a better term, pissed on, oh, this and that. Because, you know, he's a very decency describes Fred Wilpon.
Yeah, he's a good man.
He's a good, good man. But you know what?
The son, another story, I'm told. I don't know him at all. But fingerprints are on the mess. And they're Jeff's more than Fred.
The point of the issue is this, though. If it wasn't for bad luck, they'd have no luck.
You're not kidding.
You know, you can talk about, listen, it's funny. When they were 11-1, everybody was saying, when they were 11-1, right. Mickey Callaway is just what the doctor ordered. Mickey Callaway is this. We had to get, I'm just drawing a blank. Who's the last guy? Terry Collins. We had to get Terry Collins away. He was this. He was that. Let me tell you something. That's when he was 11-1. Now they make him out to be a bumbling numbskull. It's you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't.
Of course,
you know that's just the way it is. And that was one of the things that would drive me crazy. I think you handled it. I know you handled it better than me. Sometimes the calls would drive me nuts. When I say would drive me nuts, it's like, okay, a guy is bad, or a guy's having a bad season. Do we have to talk about it and beat him up for 3 hours? It was the same shit over and over again.
You and Francesa, to me, and you talk about the two people who had a lot of success together. I don't think it's the same for either of them, but they're doing obviously very well.
Mike and Chris. Mike and Mad Dog.
But you and Francesa don't suffer fools very well, if you know from what I'm talking about. And you were a little bit more candid and straightforward than I was. And I can't be that. I wish I could. You know, you are who you are.
Right.
You have the heart as big as any building in New York City. And also, you would point a finger, verbally so, at somebody who was, you know, not bringing to the table a good conversation that you wanted to be a part of. And you would speak your mind, and you would let the callers know. Now, and Francesa is the same way. Russo is a little bit different. I, with my two sun-kissed raisins between my legs and my cell phone, the bottom line is I can't do that. But I do respect and admire a little bit with those who can be that way. And I think, generally speaking, if not one caller, an audience can respect that.
Yeah, I just think everybody handles things differently. That's what partnership is, bringing something to this table.
Right.
Listen, to this day, I will say this, and I don't mean it to be disparaging to either one. They've both made tons of money and had plenty of success. I'm talking about Mike and the Mad Dog.
Sure.
but they were still better together than they are apart.
Oh, there's no question.
Because when you're together, it's a dialogue, and when you're apart, it's a monologue.
And it worked that they really hated each other.
They did.
In the very beginning.
For a long time.
Yeah. It made for a different sound.
They would go months without even looking at each other outside of the studio.
That's right. They caught on and both very successful.
Yeah, no, I was talking about, the partnerships before, and like you say, we had a good run, and
5 years.
It was five and a half years. I also do remember, I don't think we've ever spoken about it on the air. Might as well say it now. I'll never forget the day. I'm sure you'll remember. We're sitting there, and I was getting, everybody was calling me, the newspaper guys, because we were connected, and newspaper guys were saying, Russ, this is what I'm hearing. We come into work the next day. I come in, and it's in the papers. It's in the news. It's in the Post. Salzburg and Summers is out.
Executives are telling me, we're rethinking things. Meanwhile, the promotion department, the newspapers are hearing everybody. We're leaving. At work, they're telling us, maybe we'll have second thoughts.
So now I come in, and I put my stuff down. It's early, and in the bullpen, which is the newsroom. And sitting across from me, I will never forget it to this day, good guy, Patrick McEnroe. Patrick McEnroe was doing... It was doing the sports on Imus. So I'm sitting there, and Mark Chernoff comes over to me, and he looks at me. He says, "Now, Russ, calm down. I don't know where this stuff is coming from." So I'm like, "What kind of shit is that? What do you mean you don't know where it's coming from? Right. I knew you would get excited as soon as I saw this. I don't know where it's coming from. Mark, it's got to be coming from... freaking someplace, because it's there. I'm getting people calling me. I don't know where it's coming from." So I said, "Do me a favor. I got to prepare my show. I don't want to be pissed off. Leave me alone." So he walks away, and I call up Joel Hollander, had already left. I call up Lee Davis. I go, "Lee, this is bullshit. I'm really pissed off." He says, "Russ, calm down. Do your show. Come up. We'll talk after the show." I go, "Fine." I go upstairs after the show, because we both were talking about it during the break.
Sure.
I'm hunting for bear. Like, I'm ready to, let's go 15 rounds, you piece of shit. I'm ready to go. I walk in to Lee Davis's office, and there is Mark Chernoff. Lee has me come in, and then I turn around, and Mark is behind, sitting in a corner, behind the door. And I look at Mark. I go, "Okay, what's up?" So Lee goes, "Well, Russ, we're going to make a change." I looked at Mark, and I go, "What the F was this all about? What was that whole bullshit scene downstairs?" And this is more than losing a job. This is what pissed me off, that Mark said to me, as only Mark can, "Well, I wasn't sure. I didn't want you to say anything on the air."
Right.
And that bothered me more than losing, because this about me. I never, ever have, and I never will wash my laundry on the air. I never spoke about that stuff. So anyway, long story short, that was the end.
I walk out,
you're sitting in the hall waiting to come in going into the principal's office.
Well, who told me about that you were really leaving? Susan Waldman.
Yeah, there you go.
That's how I found out.
Yeah.
And she replaced us with Jody McDonald.
Right.
But that's how I found out. Everything else was pretty much, we're rethinking it. We don't know.
And the reason they were passing the buck.
Susan Waldman said, "Don't say you got this from me." And maybe I shouldn't even be saying anything.
No. But it's done. It's over with. Listen, all wounds have been healed.
Past the statute of limitations.
Listen to me. I was very pissed off. Mark.
Well, you just wanted somebody to be straightforward with you.
Just like Yogi wanted, Yogi rest in peace, just like Yogi wanted George to be straightforward with him when he was fired that time, and that's why Yogi stayed away. So Mark would see me, and I was really pissed off. I was more hurt about that than anything else. So Mark would see me at the stadium and this and that, and I wanted nothing to do with him. I wasn't talking to him. He would call my agent, you know, how can I make this right, blah, blah, blah. Finally, Mark sees me one day, and he just comes up, and this is after maybe, you know, I don't know, a month or 2 months, and he comes up and says, Russ, it was the biggest mistake I ever made the way I did it. I apologize. And I just looked at Mark, and I said, it's over with. We shook hands.
Yeah.
He never forgets my birthday. We're friends. Shit happens, but at that time, I was pissed off.
Well,
the way it happened.
At least he apologized.
Yeah, no. Chernoff's a good man.
Yeah.
Chernoff's,
yeah.
Listen, he's got to deal with a lot of crap now.
Oh, yeah. Listen, this is the business we have chosen, isn't it? You know, so everything is in play, whether it's fair or not. And I would imagine other businesses, too. Well, you know, the butcher, the baker, the candlestick maker, they go through the same stuff.
Now, I like the way you said that this is the business we've chosen. So if we were the Godfather's kids, I'm assuming you would pick me as Sonny.
I'd be Fredo, for
sure. I'm smart. I can do things.
Yeah, well, sure. I mean, am I not Fredo? When you get to know me, I'm Fredo. Put the glass on my stomach and cure me. Daddy just brought a pair home from the grocery store. Yeah, I know. That kind of stuff. See, that's the thing. I get, like, frozen with that kind of stuff happening. And Susan Waldman is the one that said, don't say anything to anybody. I'm not supposed to talk. Meanwhile, the promotions department was getting ready for a change.
Right. Everybody.
The sales department.
And the writers are all calling me, telling me. But like I say, folks, we're just, it's reminiscing. Like I say,
yeah, right.
Mark's a good friend. We talk.
Right.
Believe me, when his Indians were in the World Series.
And his son,
who's the general, Mark's son is the general manager of the Indians.
Right.
I'd wish him well. We talk. So, I mean, it's all gone. We just talk about the story at that time.
Well, right. And you know, you should be given some credit talking about something that is never comfortable for anyone when they're losing a job or changing, being reassigned, as some people will say, instead of just leaving or getting fired. And nobody has been, I'm going to tell you something, and I've been, at one time, I was out of work 2.5 years.
When was that? I'm serious.
Right before I got hired at WFAN.
Really?
That's correct. From 84 to 87, middle of 87 when WFAN started. And I was the last hire and got hired on a videotape, not an audio tape, a videotape. And John Pruder was the guy who was the original program director. A quick story about him. And me and Ed Coleman were Coleman was going to be overnight, and they didn't know. The agent I had was with Al Primo.
Right.
And handled some of my TV work in Atlanta and Los Angeles, where I'd done some TV. And anyway, Steve Porricelli, the name of the agent that I had at the time, he heard about WFAN. I was the last hire. They hired me off of a videotape. Not an audio tape, and they didn't know whether overnight they would have a live person, syndicated programming, or repeat daytime programming. And John Pruder was the program director, who was Pete Franklin's producer in Cleveland. So he got the job, and nobody from New York was ever hired. See, this is why in the beginning it really didn't work. Yeah, Jim Lampley and Greg Gumbel, they didn't know what they were doing.
But
they were only using it as a pit stop for their next TV job.
Till this day...
The hiring in the beginning was awful.
But to this day, you, and it's like we were talking about it earlier, you were, to me, even though you weren't a New Yorker, you were the only guy who represented as a New Yorker.
Oh, well, how else?
You know, the Rangers.
Of course.
With everything. You were the guy.
Well, these were teams I kind of followed before I was here as a kid. So anyway, and in 86, by the way, a couple of days after the shuttle disaster, Jack Spector, I think was his name, did sports talk on WNBC Radio 660. He dies of a heart attack, and they have open auditions. Listen to this one. And so Brian Gumbel, who I'd worked with at KNBC in L.A., I did weekends. He did Monday through Friday with Stu Nahan, the ring announcer in all the Rocky movies.
Sure, of course.
Yeah. Yeah, you know from Stu. Anyway, so Gumbel sets me up with, he knows I want to work here. So he sets me up for an audition to replace, I believe his name was Jack Spector, and also a disc jockey, but he did a sports talk show. He passes away in 85, 86. So I come out and do an audition. It gets down to two people doing the for the job, me and Dave Sims.
Okay.
They hired Dave Sims. You know who the producer was of the Spector Sports Show and who handled the auditions of the four, five, six guys that did auditions?
Who?
Mike Breen.
Really?
Breen, and talk about somebody who has, this was January, a couple of days after the shuttle disaster.
Wow.
You know, when the rocket went up and the seven people. And so it was January, it was snowing, I came out, it was with the audition, and they gave it to Sims. And then a year later, year and a half later, in 87, in July, Sims and I are working at the same place.
It really is.
Mike Breen.
Yeah.
Mike Breen, the producer.
Look at Mike now. God bless. Him.
Yeah, no kidding.
Good guy.
Oh, yeah, nice.
Good, as they say, a mensch.
Correct.
Yeah, a really.
That's right.
You know what? When you think about some of the people that we had there, you know, Breeny was terrific. Iron Eagle.
Iron, as a board operator also.
Hey, Iron Eagle, I remember I was sitting at my desk on a rainy, nasty day at Channel 9, and there was word that the radio spot was open for the Nets radio job. Ian calls me. You know, you and I were working together at the Fan.
Sure.
Ian calls me and says, Russ, I got to get this job. I got to get this job.
Help him out?
I said, Ian, I mean, I think they have somebody. He says, Russ, I got to get the job. I said, I hang up the phone. I says, let me see what I can do. I call up, who was the vice president at the time, Eric Spoelstra's father. John Spoelstra was the VP of the Nets.
Okay.
I call him up. They were about to hire a guy from then the CBA. I said, John, it's Iron Eagle. You know of him from FAN. It would be good publicity for you, PR. But the guy's very good. And he says, yeah. Well, Russ, I'm just about to do this. Listen to his tape. I go, can you get me his tape today? I said, hold on. I call up Ian, you got to get the tape over there today.
Oh,
Ian
nice.
Got the job.
Great.
And the rest is history.
Yeah.
And now every time I see him, I fell.
Okay? Oh, yeah, like your son. Your surrogate son.
And he's just a guy. And I'll tell you another thing about Ian. You were going on vacation. You were going home. I remember going home to see your dad in San Francisco.
Right.
Eddie Scazzeri walks by.
The Eddie Scazzeri?
Who? Eddie Maple? Who do you think I'm talking about? Eddie comes by and says, listen, Russ, would you be interested in talking to Mel Brooks? I go, what, are you kidding me? Of course. He goes, really? I says, why? Who called? Well, they're promoting the 25th anniversary release of Young Frankenstein. I says, of course I'd want to talk to him.
Yeah,
so
sure.
He goes, now you're on vacation. He goes, yeah, because they'd even say they'll bring him into the studio. I go, are you kidding
me? Yeah, Mel Brooks.
Now remember, people might not know this. Some of you are too young. There used to be an old Xerox commercial with the monks, the short. Iron Eagle's dad was a Borscht Belt comedian. So Iron had a lot of sarcasm just like you do, a different type.
And really funny.
Extremely funny.
You and I have a sense of humor. He's really funny.
Yeah,
he could be a stand-up. And I think the dad also, the voice of Alka-Seltzer. Speedy Alka-Seltzer on TV. I think so.
One thing I'll never forget, Iron and myself, we see something. We're at one end of the bullpen in the newsroom, and somebody's bending down with, like, white tight pants on, and we're just looking like, wow, that is a great ass. And we both, like, give each other the elbow. And the next thing we know, the person stands up. It was a guy producer.
Well, listen, who can tell these days?
Oh,
no.
I'm not going to mention his name. I will tell you the name off the air.
Okay. You know, by the way, you mentioned Pat McEnroe.
Patrick McAfee.
One day he comes out of the I was working with you, and so we the Imus. He was a guest, I believe, and frequently.
Yes.
With Imus, I didn't recognize him, and I thought he was an intern. And I said, "If there's anything," he comes out of the thing. He was walking around the newsroom looking for some copy or something. And I'm saying to him, "Listen, if there's anything I can do to help you, let me know." And I had no clue whatsoever. And he went along with it. He didn't say, "Hey, I'm Patrick McEnroe." I just assumed he was an intern. I said, "You've been with Imus a long time." I said, "Listen, by the way, next time you go and get him and Bernard coffee, you know, I wouldn't mind one also. If you don't mind, I'd be more than happy, you know, to get you one someday." So the bottom line, it was Patrick McEnroe, and I haven't heard the last of it from some of the old timers. It is a true story. I thought he was an intern.
Steve, Schmoozy, I got to tell you, this has been
the best ever.
The time has flown. It's been a blast. You have to promise me one thing.
Again.
Be well, but you have to come back and do this.
I'll come back with a catheter where I can really feel comfortable. Well, I haven't been the same since.
I would relish the opportunity to watch you empty your pee bag.
Every hour on the hour.
I love you, buddy. Thank you so much for coming. This has been great.
My pleasure. My pleasure. Thanks so much for having me. You notice that every athlete says that, or even a guest that you have on radio and TV. Oh, yeah. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, blow it out your ass. Yeah. I'm not really glad you're here. But for you, I mean it. I love you, pal.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here.
You bet.
It's been great, folks. And I want to thank all of you for getting a load of this. Now I like to get a load of you and let me know your thoughts on today's show with the sweater and the schmoozy. You can let me know on Twitter at Russ Salzberg or on Facebook. You can also get a load of my website real easy. It's russsalzberg.com. My thanks to my board op producer here, Crash, a.k.a. Mike Caragliano, 77 WABC News Director Craig Schwab, Assistant 77 WABC News Director Matt Dahl, and as always, you people, because without you people, I'd have nobody here to talk to. So until next time, it is me, Russ Salzberg, saying to you people, bye-bye, so long, and farewell.